Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, yes, indeed. Thank you, Glenn Harris, for that stellar introduction. And yes, listening to this program may, in fact, cause you to lean to the right, but that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. If you're a liberal, recovering liberal, if you're a moderate, a rhino, someone who struggles with common sense in general, or if you know folks like this, which is more than likely the case for those of you listening to this show, we can in fact stop and even reverse the devastating effects of liberalism. And that can happen in as little as 2 weeks. Studies have shown, my own studies, approved by none other than Barack Obama himself and his health department, DHS, you name it. The entire kit and caboodle has approved this. So welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you. As always, if you want to reach out to me with questions or comments, or if you have anything that you want to share with me that you found in the news that you think we should discuss on this program, I welcome it. Email address is Todd, T-O-D-D, at theantidotetoliberalism.com. And of course, you can connect with me on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at Common Sense Gear. Common Sense Gear, G-E-A-R, is the last four letters of that Twitter handle. Pleasure to be here. Again, as usual, as we've hit the political season, the presidential election cycle, the nomination process anyway, the primary process, we're moving full speed ahead. Stories abound, all sorts of information, all sorts of things we could discuss on here. A lot to cram into about 40 minutes. So, of course, we can't cover all of it. We try to cover a variety of information, different issues and topics. But today I want to start with an issue that I've seen bantered about in the media. In fact, I saw this last night. By accident, I'll point out, flipping through the channels and turning on CNN. I do this occasionally, by the way. Flip on CNN. It's 2:02. I have DirecTV. Many of you probably have no idea what channel CNN is on your cable or satellite provider's list of channels. It took me a while to figure out where CNN was. Found it, 2:02, flipping on every now and again. Usually get some entertainment, a little bit of glimpse into insanity, how the left views the world. But flipped on Don Lemon. Of course, this is the guy that pondered for a moment if the missing Malaysian airliner slipped into a black hole. I mean, that was, in fairness, was not his theory. It was one that was put forth by one of his viewers on a question via Twitter or something. But he asked it, and he paused to consider that for a moment. But nonetheless, Don Lemon was talking to Donald Trump last night. And, of course, I don't know if you've seen this. If you follow the news, you probably have. But apparently Donald Trump, in a speech, I think it may have even been the speech he gave at Liberty University. I believe that's the case, that the Christian University that Donald Trump spoke at here a couple of days ago. I believe when referencing the Bible during that speech, it may have been another speech, but I think it was that speech, he referenced the book of 2 Corinthians as 2 Corinthians. Now, this, of course, has caused a whole bunch of things to a whole bunch of criticism for Trump. Trump says that he was given a note by Tony Perkins, one of the what's his group? A family group. The name of his association is escaping me at the moment. But Tony Perkins, a solid, devout Christian man, wrote down a note, put down 2 Corinthians, and that's what Trump says during his speech. And, of course, this leads some to raise the question, who caused this 2 Corinthians? That shows that this guy doesn't know anything he's talking about regarding the Bible. I'm just passing along information that folks are saying and, you know, arguing and so forth. Because we don't call it 2 Corinthians, we call it 2 Corinthians. Now, for those of you that read the Bible, I think you would agree with that. I was thinking about this as I was watching this and think and listening to the debate, and Trump kind of jumped a lemon, you know. I can't even believe you're asking me this. That's a ridiculous question. This is Trump, of course, responding to Lemon. This is something, Don, that people in Europe commonly refer to the book of 2 Corinthians as 2 Corinthians. I can't speak to that. I mean, he was speaking for a particular country. I want to say it was Scotland or something. Regardless, he was saying that 2 Corinthians is how it's referred to in parts of Europe. I'm not really sure how that matters. I mean, you could make the case that in parts of Europe, socialism and chaos because of refugees is more common. So I don't know that really makes any significant difference in the way people are going to view this. But 2 Corinthians was a letter that Paul, the Apostle Paul, wrote to the church at Corinth. And, of course, it was the second letter that he wrote, thereby giving it the name 2 Corinthians. And the first book to the church at Corinth was called 1 Corinthians. Now, I've been a Christian for, 1993. So, what's that, 22 or 23 years. I was trying to think about this. I may have heard one or two folks say something like this, go to 2 Timothy or go to 2 Corinthians or what have you. But I don't know that I've ever heard a preacher say this. Now, I could be wrong, and I'm not implicating Donald Trump. This apparently has created a firestorm and something that I saw last night, and I just wanted to bring it up. And, you know, he's getting jumped on. It echoes the question he was answered, or the answer he gave when he was on one of those liberal, what's the name of that show? With All Due Respect or something like that, with those two liberal political commentators. And they asked him what his favorite verse of the Bible was. These are the same folks that questioned Cruz about his Cuban heritage. You know, what's your favorite Cuban dish? What's your favorite Cuban music? What's your favorite, you know, Cuban whatever? I mean, trying to be cornered and caught with a gotcha question to say, well, you're not really Cuban. Ted Cruz, even though your father is from Cuba, even though your father fled the Cuban dictator Fidel Castro and communism, even though he was punished for his beliefs and stance against communism, that doesn't matter. You're not Cuban, Ted Cruz. Well, the same thing is here. The same line of questioning for Donald Trump and his Christian faith, or you know, whatever. You can have your opinions on this. I'm trying to be as objective as possible here. I'm just laying this out before you, and I'm going to ask you a question. So he's now getting jumped on as being a Christian pretender because he couldn't give a specific verse that was his favorite verse when questioned by those two jokers on MSNBC or whatever channel they're on. And now he's referring to the book of 2 Corinthians as 2 Corinthians. He comes out and says, hey, this is something that's not uncommon. You know, my mother's from, I forget where his mother's from, but somewhere in Europe. And basically, the insinuation was that's kind of how she always referred to him, or referred to the book to him as a young man, as a child. And that's just how he's always known it. But my question is, does this matter to you as a voter? Is this just something that's a legitimate, you know, varying way of talking about a common book in the Bible? Or is this a red flag to you? And does it matter? I mean, do you think that he's just, you know, has a different style? I mean, Trump has his own way of doing things, obviously. But is it his own style, or is it something that points to an issue that makes you question the authenticity of his beliefs? Not what I'm doing here. It's an issue that's come up in the news, and I just wanted to throw it out there and A, make sure that you had seen this, and you know, B, just to see what you thought about that. So anyway, but speaking of Christianity, there's a new report by Open Doors, which is an organization that studies, that inspects, that researches Christian persecution worldwide. And they say that 2015 was the most violent year against Christians, against Christianity, in modern history. I mean, you've heard Obama go to the podium, his teleprompter in hand, and he would say something like, you know, 2014, 2015, these are the warmest years on record. The seas are rising. The earth is dying. We must act or be wiped off from the face of the planet. You hear him say this sort of stuff pretty much all the time. But I don't think you've ever heard him say anything of this sort. 2015 was the most violent year against Christians in modern history. In modern history, the man who was supposed to usher in world peace in 2008 has instead contributed. And I'm not blaming this all on Obama. Don't misunderstand me. But you have to be placing your head in the sand if you don't believe that empowering these fanatical groups, not opposing them, not properly handling the outbreak of terrorism and the way that ISIS has spread throughout the region because we created a void. I mean, we've enabled, and his fingerprints are on this, we've enabled a lot of these groups that are attacking, killing, torturing, relocating Christians and their families. The number one biggest offender is a communist country, North Korea. Now, we hear the left defend communism. I spent in my college career from 1996, the fall of 96, until the spring of 2000, I spent virtually every one of those semesters listening to, in one way, shape, manner, or form, some leftist ideologue who was sympathetic to communism defend those beliefs. In fact, I had a class called Is Capitalism Better? The professor, I won't mention his name, I liked the man, he was a good guy. I mean, a guy that really believed that communism was superior to capitalism. This was a guy that lived in the Soviet Union. Of course, he would tell us constantly that all the things that we had seen on TV about communism was just not the truth. It was just this lovely utopia, basically. And these folks are defenders of communism. So the number one offender of Christianity, the number one persecutor of Christianity is North Korea, the communist nation of North Korea, which, look, say what you will, communism and socialism, I've heard Rush say this before, the difference between communism and socialism is that communism builds walls to keep people in. I mean, communism is really socialism with force, with the force of military force, with guns and walls and barbed wire and hardcore atheistic, you can't believe in God sort of beliefs. It's socialism times a number. But socialism is embedded within communism. These are what you might say is kissing cousins. You might say they are related and tied together. I think that's absolutely the truth. So we've got a group of Democrats. We got the nutty professor Bernie Sanders, who's a self-avowed socialist. He'll tell you democratic socialist now, but because he wants to distance himself from precisely the thing I'm talking about. The second is Hillary Clinton, who espouses those very same socialistic beliefs, the promises of utopia, free lunch, paid for by the producers in America, more taxes, more handouts, more freebies. Government can solve all of your problems. One might say that that's setting up, leading to the problem of making government the god. I mean, it's what happens. It's what happens in communism. Communism outlaws religion. Communism is the state essentially taking the role of religion. The state is essentially the god. You don't like that? Okay, fine. We'll throw you in the gulags. I mean, that's essentially what communism is. I'm not accusing Bernie Sanders of that, not accusing Hillary Clinton of that degree, but the ideology of socialism is the seedling of communism. It is. And then, of course, we've got sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley up there doing the same thing, espousing these ridiculous notions that are socialistic in nature. But my point is, the left is the defender. The left defends those. Now, I'm not saying the left defends Christian persecution. I think the left ignores it. I think the left ignores it in droves. I think the left literally closes its eyes, plugs its ears, turns away, puts its head in the sand, and just ignores the reality of these sorts of things. But they are defenders of socialism, which is the seedling of communism, the kissing cousin of communism, the starting point of communism. But on that list, once you get past the communist country at the top, led by that lunatic Kim Jong-un now, I got to pause because I was used to saying Kim Jong-il, his father. I mean, Kim Jong-un, by incidentally, claimed that they believe, well, I don't know if the people really believe this, they're told that they must believe that he's a form of a god or he's a god. I mean, these leaders are absolute maniacal lunatics. Completely narcissistic, out of control, power hungry. They have no limits on what they can impose or do to their people. And as such, they put estimates show 50 to 70,000 people, Christians, in forced labor camps. But once we get past that, and that's atrocious. That's atrocious. These people are the people that believe these things and act as hardcore communist dictator thugs, they're the scum of the earth. But let's move on to number 2 through number 10. Number 2 through number 10 on the list of nations that offend, or excuse me, that persecute Christianity throughout the world, the biggest offenders, number 2 through number 10 have a common theme. In fact, that common theme is the most common reason, the most common ideology, belief that leads to Christian persecution throughout the entire world. In fact, 40, according to the report here, Open Doors, 40 of the top 50 offenders, persecutors of Christianity, nations where persecution of Christians is the highest, the top out of the top 50 of those, 40 of those, 80%, 80% have this as the number one, or excuse me, 80% of these, 40 of the top 50 nations that persecute Christians in the world, 40 of those are predominantly made up of Muslims. Now, I know that we have been told that this has nothing to do with religion, nothing at all to do with it. This is completely coincidental. This is I mean, if there's any correlation, it's simply random coincidence. These things are not related. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do that with the fact that Islam considers Christianity a polytheistic religion. You know, that's one of the reasons why when a Muslim recites the I don't know what the name of it is. I want to say the Salat, but I may have that confused with another thing. But when they make their confession, when they make the statement that says there is no God but Allah, and then the second part of that is Allah is his messenger. When they make that statement, that declaration of faith, if you will, that first part, there is no God but Allah, is directly responding to Christianity, who says, we'll say that there's one God, but we believe in the Trinity, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit, the three in one. Muslims call that polytheistic. Now, this is all coincidental, of course, and it's definitely coincidental when the Quran talks about how to address the unbeliever, sometimes in violent ways. Coincidental that people that are reading those words are persecuting Christians, and that the number one type of persecution is Islamic extremism, far and away, by the way, Islamic extremism, has nothing at all to do with religion. Those things are completely coincidental. I bet the left, when they read this research, is jaws agape on the ground, completely confounded, confused. Heck, they might even accuse these people at Open Doors of being racist, of being Muslim ideologue haters. People like, you know, to bring Donald Trump back into this, to throw them in that boat and to say, anyone that says anything bad about anything Islamic, you hate Islamic people. You hate Muslims. Absurd. Guys, I got to stop and take our first break. More on this when we get back, so sit tight. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Thursday. It is January 21st. Boy, time is flying by here. By the way, we have a couple of big NFL games this weekend. We've got the Denver Broncos hosting the New England Patriots, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, I think 17 now. And then we have the Carolina Panthers playing host to the Arizona Cardinals, which that should be a good game. The Carolina Panthers I really enjoy watching that team. You know what? I really enjoy watching the Arizona Cardinals, too. I have a little bit more interest in that than Manning, Brady, 17. Of course, being in Indianapolis, I've seen virtually all of those games. And with all due respect to Peyton, he's not necessarily come out on the winning end of most of those matchups. So anyway, but still should be a couple of good games. Good defenses, good running games. And then the Super Bowl here in a couple weeks. So good time of year for the NFL. By the way, I saw yesterday, wasn't planning on talking about this, but I saw Antoine Randall. I just saw this. I got to tell you, I went last night. My brother, who is a sponsor for the Indiana Pacers, he gets tickets to events at the Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I always want to call it Conseco Fieldhouse, but Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And last night was the Disney on Ice production. So we took our three kiddos along with one of their friends to watch Disney on Ice. Yes, I watched Disney on... You know what? I watched parts of Disney on Ice. I watched the kids watching it. Talked to my parents went as well. But a lot of fun. A good night. But before we went to, I think we grabbed a pizza, and there were TVs up in the corners of the pizza place, and I read something on the bottom of the screen that said Antoine Randall L., which Antoine Randall L. went to Indiana University, which is not far from me, and then he played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think the Washington Redskins as well. Was a quarterback in college, but played, he was a punt returner, kick return guy, and played wide receiver in the NFL. And, excuse me, and at the bottom of the screen it said, Antoine Randall L. says that football won't exist, or that the NFL will cease to exist, or something along these lines, in 20 years. Now, I didn't see the story, but in talking about the NFL, it reminded me of this. But you hear, look, the NFL is doing a lot of things that the hardcore fan, which the people that were fans before, I would say the past, I don't know, 8 to 10 years, where they've really broadened their base and they've softened the game and they've tried to take away the high impact plays and really a lot of the hitting, a lot of the things that what I would consider the tried and true hardcore fan like myself, someone that grew up loving the physicality, the intensity of the game. If the NFL continues in that direction, it is going to lose. I think it's already lost some of those. It's picking up a lot of others. It's picking up a lot of, you know, they're looking at building their audience with women. They're looking at building their audience overseas, which is why they're doing the things in the games in London and so forth, which the Colts, I guess, are going there next season. But regardless, I mean, who knows if he's that's a pretty bold prediction. But, you know, you see the responses to this stuff, and we act like that's impossible. I mean, it's today, when you look at the power of the NFL, I can understand why people want to scoff and laugh. But they are changing the game dramatically. And they are changing a lot of the reasons they got to where they are, in my opinion. And that's not a good formula. And I'll say this, not predicting that Randall L. is correct. Could tell you some stories about, I had a friend that played with him in college. I could tell you a few stories. I will not do that. I will not do that. But anyway, the NFL is definitely not what it used to be. And just because something is ultra powerful, I mean, think about this. The Soviet Union fell, right? In my lifetime. In 1989, I think it was 89, when the Berlin Wall came down. I think the final collapse was in the early 90s. But the Soviet Union collapsed. That would have been laughable in the, I mean, what, 20 years before that, the 1960s. The Russians were beating us into space, right? I mean, Kodak. Look at Kodak. Look at what Kodak was before digital cameras took place, or, you know, took over American society, where we have cameras in everything that we own. The idea that Kodak would have vanished from the scene would have been laughable 20 years before it happened. In fact, go back and look. Go back and look at the top 100 corporations. Go look at the Dow 30 or Dow 100 from 20, 50 years ago, and see how many of those aren't around anymore, whether they've been bought or some of them have gone out of business or what have you. I mean, look at that. And not, again, not predicting that, but my point is, our viewpoint of history, our viewpoint on what's possible, sometimes we give so much more power to the immediate history, these small blocks of history. Kind of what I think the global warmists do. They look at data that goes back to maybe the 1880s for scientific, you know, measurable temperatures and so forth. And they extrapolate from that all sorts of things. When the vast majority of history, they have no idea. There's no recorded information upon which to make any sort of guess as to what is normal or not, temperature-wise, rainfall-wise, what have you. And we take these little snapshots of time, and we say, wow, the NFL is ultra-powerful. Of course the NFL can fall. Why couldn't it? The Roman Empire fell. The Soviet Union fell. Big corporations have come and gone. Anyway, I just found that interesting as I was getting ready to go watch, what, Disney on Ice with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Daisy and Aladdin and Jasmine. And look at this. Have no idea I knew this many. Actually, I didn't really know who those princesses were. My wife was telling me as they were skating around. I'm like, who's this one again? So, anyway, I feel like I'm up to date on my Disney stuff now. So, but back to this Open Doors report, the study on persecution of Christians worldwide. We mentioned that the number one type of persecution, far and away, is Islamic extremism, and that it's present. Excuse me, that 40 of the top 50 offenders of Christian persecution worldwide are predominantly or majority Muslim countries. 9 out of the top 10 Muslim majority countries. And I'm sure the left will tell me that this has nothing to do with religion. And not only that, we reference global warming. The left is more concerned with a fantasy crisis that's somewhere into the future that, look, I think is fabricated and silly, but they are hardcore believers. But even the hardcore believers, they'll say things like, "It's not too late to act. It's not too late to act. You know, we can still save the planet," or what have you. Well, instead of being preoccupied with this possible or this fantasy crisis, why don't we spend time fixing a legitimate immediate crisis, which is the persecution, killing, torture, slaughter of Christians worldwide. I mean, these are real people. They're dying. They're being forced from their homes. They're being imprisoned. They're being beheaded. They're being burned alive. They're being crucified. They're being shot. They're being raped. They're being forced to convert to Islam or pay a high tax, or possibly face death from that. Many of them are fleeing. I mean, if I had to guess, and if you went up to a group of millennial college students, which if you're a millennial listening to this show, you're probably not like many of your colleagues, many of your contemporaries. But there's a lot of millennials that, well, part of it's just being young, but part of it's being force-fed of a worldview that's completely corrupt and nonsensical, which is liberalism, progressivism, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I bet if you went up and asked them, if you did a poll, and you said, which of these is a bigger problem, the persecution of Christians worldwide or the persecution of Muslims worldwide? Now, you might have to define the word persecution to these folks. But once you establish the definition of terms, I would venture to say that most of them would say that the persecution of Muslims worldwide is the bigger problem. Now, if there's persecution of Muslims worldwide or anywhere, that's not good either. I'm not condoning that. That's not even the point. Now, a lot of people will say, well, this guy's a Christian. You know, he's just upset when his people get persecuted. People that share his faith get persecuted. No, we don't want this. This is not a Christian thing. This runs contrary to what a Christian believes. But I would venture to say that most people believe that there's more persecution of Muslims than Christians. And by the way, if there is more persecution of Muslims than Christians, the persecution of the Muslims is being perpetrated by other Muslims. You know, the left advances this phony narrative that suggests that Christians are this group of people that hate everybody, and not only that, but are causing great harm to them, that are damaging their lives, that are forcing them to do and believe things that they don't believe, blah, blah, blah. But I think most of these college kids would say that the persecution of Muslims by Christians is a bigger problem than the other way around. Of course, I also read a story that shows that 10% of college, I think it was college graduates, could be college students, they think that Judge Judy is on the Supreme Court. I mean, she may as well be. We got the people we have up there are citing foreign law. They're legislating from the bench. They're doing whatever they feel like. You know, having Judge Judy on the Supreme Court bench may not. I mean, honestly, I would. There's a couple I would replace with her immediately. Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, Breyer. Anyway. I'm going to stop and take our last break. When we get back, a couple of other things going on with the refugee crisis in Europe, including something that Norway is doing to try to combat some of the sexual violence, the predatory violence that they've had being perpetrated by some Muslims against women there. So sit tight. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Back to the Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Thursday. Not Wednesday, it's Thursday. It's January 21st. It's a pleasure to be here. Email, should you want to contact me, todd@theantidotoliberalism.com. You can tweet me at Common Sense Gear. And by the way, if there's something on this show that we've mentioned that you want to read the article, we always post a show notes page on our website. The website is theantidotoliberalism.com. Just when you get to the homepage, click on the show notes button at the top of the page on the toolbar, along the header, and it'll give you the most current show notes. For the break, I mentioned the refugee crisis in Europe. I mean, we even see George Soros now coming out, the hardcore leftist George Soros, who funds about every socialist progressive campaign, politician, government, etc., that you can think of. George Soros, he's coming out and saying that these refugees are threatening the very existence of the European Union, and they are. I mean, we very well may be on the precipice of having, say, a nation like Germany. I mean, they're being transformed before our very eyes, thanks to Angela Merkel. And now they see what happens when you, arms wide open, eyes wide shut, just accept people who claim to be Syrian refugees, which is awful. Don't misunderstand me. I feel like I've got to throw that in there for the leftists that may be listening. But this is not about, the problem is not with a true refugee. The problem is with those that are infiltrating, that are hijacking the refugee movement, and that are bringing very bad things to Europe. Things like Taharouj, which is mass massive groups of men who target women and gang rape them. And attacks on women have been high. Now, the left has denied this. But what's interesting to me is Norway is actually putting on... you can't make this stuff up. They're actually hosting these... I'm going to call them seminars. This is in an article on Yahoo. Headline of the article, no means no. Norway sends migrants on anti-rape courses. There you go, problem solved. The leftists have entered the building. They've established a seminar. It's got slides. It's got a Q&A. There might be, for all I know, they might be acting out scenes here. They might be bringing in women to walk in front of the group. They might have a woman, sit down with the male and have a conversation, might give him a kiss on the cheek and say, now what happens? Has she welcomed your sexual advances? Does she want to be raped? I mean, this is absolutely asinine. We act like it. This sort of thing is just totally bizarre to me. We're going to sit down. They act like this is a cultural issue, which I get it. I get that in Muslim countries, we see in many of these hardcore Sharia law type regions, we see abuse of women. We see women treated as property. This is the real war on women, incidentally. You don't see this in Christian communities. You don't see this in American communities. I mean, things that you see here happening like this are not they are by far and away the exception to the rule. But they're going to put on a class to teach these guys not to rape women. Look, I'm going to tell you, this is not a prop. This is not a cultural problem. This is a moral problem. It is absolutely wrong to do this. Absolutely 100% wrong. It is not a difference in cultural opinion. It is factually, morally abhorrent. It is despicable. It is inhumane. It is evil and violent and wicked. Seminars don't stop that. I have no problem with exposing these guys to the light of truth. That should be done. But these women need to be protected. The only thing that stands between the violent offender and the innocent victim is either the means to protect yourself or a way to, you've heard the analogy. I've got a good friend that refers to the sheepdog analogy. There has to be a sheepdog. There has to be protectors. And of course, protecting yourself is another good way to do that as well. So anyway, I've been told that there's not a crisis of rape coming from these refugees, these so-called refugees, but yet Norway's taken the time to put on seminars to teach them that rape is wrong. And we live in an upside-down world. As though a class is going to fix this problem. We need a changing of the heart. We don't need some sort of a realization that, oh yeah, wow, that's totally wrong. Can't believe what I was doing before. I mean, these aren't innocent mistakes. These are violent, atrocious acts, assaults, rapes, taharush, gang rapes. They know what's going on. They have people watching out for the authorities to come, trying to prevent them. They know the women have to be taken by force. What's that say? Anyway, I'm a little long here. I wanted to get into what was one of my favorite stories I've read all year, which was a story on cuddle parties. You'll have to check that out. I'll do that on the Daily Dose, but... Anyway, guys, that's going to wrap it up for me today. As always, it's a pleasure to be here. Email again is todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter @commonsensegear. And that's going to do it. So thanks again for joining us. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.